Twisted Sisters Crime will contain mature content, graphic descriptions, and violence.
Listener discretion is advised. This podcast may upset trauma survivors.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. I'm Aubrey.
And I'm Crystal. We're so excited to tell you our stories from Sweden today, so buckle up for some stats.
According to Statista, the most common crime reported in 2020 was actually theft. There were 111 homicides, 318 murder and manslaughter cases, 366 shootings, 84.6 thousand abuse cases, 19 thousand sexual abuse cases, and 9.2 thousand people sentenced to imprisonment.
Okay, guys, we also found some pretty weird laws that we kind of wanted to tell you. It's random. It's illegal to paint your house without getting a license first. Kind of weird. It is illegal to post pictures of Swedish money. And it is illegal to spontaneously dance. Something we are always busting up, mm-hmm. You know? Can't go to Sweden then, I guess.
Yeah, no Sweden for us.
Dang.
Nope. So I think that's all of our little random tidbits of information we have for you. So let's dive right into Crystal's story.
Okay, I have Sturre Bergwall. He was born April 26, 1950. He was also known as Thomas Quick. So in 1990, after a robbery had gone wrong, Quick was confined to a care in an institution for criminally insane. During therapy over the next 10 years, he had confessed more than 30 murders that he had committed in Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Finland between 1964 and 1993. The therapy sessions were followed by police interviews. One of his confessions led to the apparent solving of an 18-year-old murder considered to be unsolvable, and another to the apparent informal solving of a murder in 1964. This 1964 crime was outside of the then 25-year statute of limitations in Sweden.
No!
Yep. Crazy, huh? But with the information given by Thomas Quick, the case was considered closed.
Hopefully you guys know what a statute of limitations are if you're listening.
Yeah.
If you don't, it's basically like so much time can pass until before they can't charge you with a crime.
Right.
So like if the statute of limitations is 5 years, I don't think it ever would be that short, but right. If it was, you could commit a crime and then 5 years later be like, hey, by the way, I did this. And they'd be like, cool, can't do anything.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Basically, so with no witnesses or technical forensic evidence to connect him to the crimes, Quick was convicted solely on the basis of his own confessions while undergoing this recovery memory therapy. Details in the confessions, though, were wildly wrong. Quick kind of relied on hints and body languages from these interrogators, like the police officers, asking him these questions to guess the answers that they kind of expected him to say.
Did he have a lawyer? Because I feel like the lawyer would have shut that down.
No.
Because...
Yeah.
That's super sketch.
Yep. So we have this 9-year-old, Therese Johansson. Sorry if that is not right. Now, she had disappeared from Drammen in 1988 and has not been found since. 10 years later, Quick was convicted of murdering her. The crucial evidence was the discovery of a burnt bone fragment from what should have been a child's bone. In 2012, though, laboratory tests showed that the supposed bone fragment was actually just composed of wood and glue fused together, probably a hardboard.
Bro.
Right?
I know it's 1988, but our forensics or whatever aren't good enough to realize that.
Yep.
This is not a bone?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right? I mean, I watch CSI and I've seen people like on CSI Las Vegas, the main guy licks it. Like,
ew.
Yeah, because, like, bones are so porous that you could tell by just it being so porous it's a bone.
I swear I've seen something where...
Yeah.
Where
it's
they, like,
weird.
Oh, Sherlock!
Okay.
Yeah, the BBC Sherlock. Like, yep. He'll, like, lick and grab stuff and Watson's just like, you freak! And it's like,
I know.
Oh my gosh.
So why didn't they just lick this thing?
Yeah, come on.
Gross. But... An analysis had not been performed before the evidence was presented to court, however.
Oh my gosh.
So, examination of his answer showed that his initial attempts to provide answers to questionings concerning, for example, murder weapons and birthmarks were wrong. So the police were like, was there a birthmark on this chick? And he'd be like, yes, but there really wasn't a birthmark. But they still were like, okay, you did this. It's you.
This feels really sketchy.
Seriously. It's crazy case. Crazy case. So the involvement of therapists meant that Quick's early failure to provide anything more vague kind of put a picture in there that, like, sharpened and focused as, or was explained away as a result of memories being retrieved as a result of this therapy. So kind of this therapy, I guess they were doing was bringing up some memories, and some of these memories kind of matched these murders. So they kind of just tried to, like, piece this all together.
Okay, this is... Make, have you seen Hunger Games?
Yes.
Like, this franchise? This is making me think of when they, like, take PETA and Tracker Jacker venom him and, like, instill memories in his head.
That's what they were doing.
Guys, this guy's
the government! It's the government! We just broke this case. Oh my gosh.
He's innocent. It was the Capitol.
It was the Capitol. The credibility of Quick's confession was wildly debated in the Swedish media. Critics of these confessions and the trials, including policemen involved in one of the investigations, wrote that there were no evidence that led Quick to any of these murders that he had confessed to. That was until he could show something he had taken that belonged to one of his victims. The probability was that he was a compulsive liar. I mean...
Was he convicted of anything before this?
No.
What the heck?
Yeah.
Because I know that, like, people question why prisoners who are already in jail, like, confessed all these crimes. It's because they're trying to delay the death sentence or whatever.
Yeah. So,
but
from all the research that I did, it just seems like he got caught for a robbery, and then they put him into a mental hospital, which then...
Messed him up,
basically. Yeah. In a December 2008 television interview, Quick denied taking any part either in any of these murders for which he had been sentenced in the more than 30 murders that he had confessed to. So basically, in this 2008 interview, Quick is denying all of these charges. And, like,
but he's basically already been convicted, so...
Kind of, yes. So, yeah, he's basically, like, going back now and being like, no, that's not what I said. That's not what I meant. Like, so because the only evidence to support these convictions were his own confession that he's now retracting, and nothing else remained on which to the basis of these judgments. So Quick changed his lawyer, and the 8 murder convictions handed down in 6 trials were all kind of squashed on an appeal. The last one was in July of 2013.
So at the point of July 2013, now he wasn't convicted of any of these that had been appealed.
Yep, so they're trying to appeal all these. So we have some of these 8 murders that he was convicted of. This is in chronological order. So there's a Charles Zelmantovas. Probably gonna pronounce all of these wrong, people, so my bad. That was in 1976, sentenced in 1994. No forensic evidence except for the confession. Sentence squashed in July 2013. We have Johan Sundsvall. 1980, sentenced in 2001. No body, no forensic, except for the confession. That sentence was squashed March 2012. We have the Stehagis couple, 1984, sentenced in 1996. No forensic evidence, but Quick gave information regarding facts that he had never disclosed to the public. His confessions were all later questioned, as Quick seemed to have been privy to all this information before the trial. Retrial was granted by the Supreme Court. Sentence was squashed May of 2013. We have Yinon Levy. He was a tourist from Israel, 1988. Sentenced in 1997. No forensic evidence, but statements included in Quick's testimony, such as incorrect guesses at the murder weapon. In the police interviews, Quick guessed a camping axe, a spade, a car jack, before actually giving the right answer, which was a wooden club. The incorrect guesses were not mentioned in court. Sentence was squashed September 2010. We have Therese Johansson. She was in Norway, 1988. Sentenced in 1999. Bone fragments presented as forensic evidence, but they turned out to be the hardboard. Sentence was squashed March 2011. Trine Jensen, 1981. Sentenced in 2000. No forensic evidence. Sentence was squashed September 2012. We have Gry Storvik, 1985. No forensic evidence. Confession. The semen found in the victim did not belong to Quick. The sentence was squashed September 2012. So the credibility of Quick's confessions had been wildly debated since 1993 up until 2008, when Quick had withdrew all of his confessions. There have been consistent doubts of the reliability of his statements, and some of his confessions have been proven to be just fabrications. The two African refugees Quick confessed to murdering in Norway were actually found to be alive and well.
This guy, he didn't do anything.
He didn't do anything wrong, literally.
He doesn't even know what he's talking about.
Seriously, that's why he needed this therapy.
But that they, just messing him up more.
Messed him up even more and made him believe that he killed these people. Let's see, we have a DNA sample from a crime scene in Norway that was subsequential, found to be mismatched, and there was no technical forensic evidence to link Quick to any of the crimes. Another circumstance is the fact that no witnesses have ever testified to see Quick in proximity of any of these crimes, even though there were more than 10,000 people interviewed for intricate details. Not one of these 10,000 people said that they saw this man.
How? I just want to know, how did they convict him?
I don't know.
At this point?
Right? There's
I know hindsight's 2020 and whatever, but come on. You are reaching.
They are. So the handling of these cases had been described as the most scandalous chapter of Scandinavian crime history, branding it as glaring incompetence and opportunity within the police and the judicial system. On July 30th, 2013, Quick was acquitted of the last 8 murder convictions. He then changed his name back to Sture Bergwall and has been released from the Saters Institution for the Criminally Insane. And most of the treatment plan has been made confidential and subject to secrecy. However, from the uncensored portion released to the press, it is apparent that Bergwall has not taken any medication for several years and is assessed as not requiring any. In a 2015 documentary film, The Confessions of Thomas Quick recounted Bergwall's life and his murder confessions and retractions, including interviews with him and any other participants in this event. In it, Bergwall explains that he made the confession to gain attention due to loneliness.
Does he know that in prison you're like by yourself a lot?
Which is why he wrote this book, duh.
Just if you're trying to confess because you're lonely, it's not gonna fix
it. I don't know.
It.
Know what he was thinking.
I don't.
So yes, Bergwall is alive and well to this day.
And he's innocent.
He's innocent. We don't know where he is located, just due to all of the secrecy that has to be kept confidential. He does have a book, The Confessions of Thomas Quick, that he did state in this documentary. So you can go to our web page and look at some of the pictures. He has a picture of his book and stuff, so
cute.
Kind of cool if you want to read his story.
I hope he's
about
okay.
All of this happened.
Right? I like feel really bad for him.
I know. It's kind of
alright, so with my haze, there are a lot of Swedish names that I'm going to completely butcher.
That's okay. I completely butchered half of these names. I did too, so.
So if you're from Sweden, I am so sorry, and I'm just apologizing for all of it. Anyway, so on December 4th of 1994, Tommy Zathraeus, I kind of want to say like Zathara, and his two friends, Guillermo Marquis Jara and Farshad Dutsi. Farshad Dutsi, I'm not 100% sure if that is his actual name. Out of all of the articles I read, that was the only one that mentioned the other friend's name. So, take that with a grain of salt. So they all went to this nightclub slash restaurant called Sturkumagent. Lord save me, I need to type that into Google. Alright, so this is apparently to Google how you say it.
Sturkumagent.
Okay, yeah.
Cool.
That
place. Okay, so they were all barred from entering. So the three of them left and returned a few hours later at about 5:15 in the morning. Tommy brought with him an AG-3, which is equivalent to our AK-7s that, you know, everyone uses in shootings.
Right.
And he started opening fire at the nightclub entrance line.
Oh my god. Okay.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I'm like...
He only wanted to hurt the bouncer, but he ended up killing three women and the bouncer and then injuring 20 people. So the bouncer's name was Eric Joachim Johnson, and then the three women were Katinka Jenberg, Daniela Josberg, and Christina Ossin. After this, the three friends went on the run, and they were not found for 3 to 4 days.
Dang.
A little scary. And in those 3 to 4 days, I think Daniela was in the hospital and then she ended up dying right before they caught him.
Okay.
Yeah. When they were caught, they all went to trial. Guillermo and Farshad both only got 4 years. Tommy started his life sentence in 1995, but he did continue to drug traffic in the jail. And he also ordered violent crimes to be done outside the prison walls until about 2003. He was using smuggled in phones until police tapped a phone and discovered what he was doing. So then in 2009, Tommy applied to set a time frame for his life sentence, but it was denied. However, in 2014, they did decide that they would agree to this and decided to schedule the conditional parole hearing in 2016. At this point, things get a little crazy in research because all of the articles are in Swedish, and so I was using Google Translate or Wikipedia,
okay,
which neither seem reliable. So Wikipedia and Murderpedia both say that since 2016, his appeals just kept getting denied and denied, and that he is still in prison. He is believed to be at too high of a risk of reoccurring his violent acts.
Right. As one should be.
Yes. There is one article I found that claims he was just released in 2020 and is currently living in an apartment with another criminal. However, this article also claims that he served his 40 years in jail when it's only been 25 years since the initial crime, so I'm going to lean towards that he's still in jail.
I would too.
So.
I mean, I'm glad I don't live in Sweden.
Yes. But... yes. So Tommy did state in his interview that he does feel extreme regret for killing the bystanders and injuring everyone else. He really just only wanted to kill the bouncer.
Which is still a life sentence.
Still, it's like, bro, it's still not okay. If you're just trying to kill the bouncer, you don't show up with an AG-3 and shoot at the whole crowd.
Seriously.
Like,
No.
Anyway, so Lars Lidberg, a professor of psychiatry, he conducted a PET scan on Tommy's brain to see if there was anything wrong that would explain his behavior. It did show damage to his frontal lobe, which is common in other violent criminals. Lidberg did explain that this injury makes it hard for Tommy to have the ability to understand the consequences of his actions. Tommy's two friends were previously in police custody a few years before this happened, and it's speculated that they may have suffered abuse from those cops, which aided in injuring their brains so that they wouldn't be able to comprehend their actions as well. In 2018, a Swedish article claims that another psychiatrist labeled Tommy with a lack of empathy, failing responsibility, and lack of self-control. However, he has improved, and Tommy has been granted a few 24-hour leave requests, and he has gone and used those to visit with his family. While in prison, he has also studied to further his education and possibly get a doctorate to work in the construction industry. Though with what he was fined for damages regarding the December incident, his finances will always be tight if he gets out, so kind of sucks. Currently, according to this article, he is serving in a tabby in a Security 2 prison, so.
His actions are wrong, yes, but he's like getting education.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Well, it's hard because if it really is something wrong with his brain, it's the whole argument of, is prison for rehabilitation or punishment? Because rehabilitation, right. It's not going to be possible if there's an injury in his brain.
Right. So, meaning that he should be in an institution for mental patients rather than...
Or on some sort of medication. If it's for punishment, then yeah, keep him in there, but...
Right?
Yeah. So... There's that.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed these stories. As always, go check out twistedsisterscrime.com for sources and pictures that we discuss in the episodes.
Rate and subscribe wherever you're listening to keep us on the air. And thank you all for your wonderful support.
Can't wait to see you all next week. So until then, stay smart, stay safe, and stay twisted.